This is Afternoon Pancakes, episode 13 of the 2020 NFL season. My name is Jared Malott. I'm here with my good friend Stephen Reed. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing well today, my friend. And how are you?
You know what? I'm just lucky to be here, to be frank.
Aren't we all, really?
How about them Colts?
Yeah, how about them Colts? Before we get too far into the episode, we want to make sure that everybody follows us on the Twitter machine. Jared at Likely Alien, myself at Nice Read Steve. Follow the podcast at HatPod Pancake and rate and review us 5 stars on wherever you get your podcast from. So just wanted to knock that out real quick.
Yeah.
Before we get too far into the episode.
Also want to say, hey, we have been doing this for well over a year, almost coming up on 60 episodes. So this is 58 or 59. Could be either or. It could be episode 14. You never know. But we've never asked y'all for money. And that's mostly because that's not why we do this. So if you want to help us.
I didn't know where you were going with that.
That's not why I don't do this, because there's money involved. But if you would like to help us grow, liking and sharing and rating us, hey man, it doesn't cost you money. It's just a click. You do it for people you don't know. Why not do it for two people you know that are just, I just like talking about football with my friend Steven, and we just happen to both have Skype. You know what I mean? That's kind of way I look at it. I have a once a week conversation with somebody I care about something we both care about, you know, and we record it and share it with all of Colts Nation. They talk more
and
than
don't edit it.
No, not at all.
Which is the funniest thing. Cause I've been on other podcasts and things like that where some things get edited. Mm-hmm. No, this is all stream of consciousness with Jared and I, and that's what I think makes this, our podcast, really unique, really fun.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, neither of us have done something dumb enough that we felt like we had to delete it, and have not yet to say anything that I've felt like we really need to go back and remove. Largely, we both speak English pretty well. I don't hear a lot of ums, likes, and ers that I would normally want to go through, and I'm not really a big fan of the jump cut anyway, so, you know, you're just going to get us raw. but that's just kind of the way both of us, if somebody came to us and said, like, you need to edit that down, or I don't think our podcast is long enough to even warrant an edit. Typically, we try to keep it at an hour and a half, maybe at tops. But yeah, I just want to make sure we said that, like, hey, we had never asked y'all for money. I never put a Patreon up. I didn't ask for donations. I'm not out here trying to get blood off a turnip. Right. But hey, like, share, rate us. That stuff's the most impactful thing you can do. And, you know, Stephen Reed does a great job of sharing our stuff. And lots of our fans do a great job of sharing our stuff. But we'd appreciate more. We'd appreciate your questions, comments, concerns, topics you'd like us to talk about. I mean, you kind of gotten the rigmarole. If you've listened to this podcast, you know how we do it. We review the previous game. We look around the AFC South pretty with a little bit more of a microscope than we do the rest of the NFL. And then we talk about the upcoming Colts contest, like whatever game is next. And then we kind of finish up with like an NFL pick 'em. And that is the whole format is meant to make this podcast for literally everyone. If you like football, period, we should be a reasonable listen, primarily because I'd like to think we're not up here spouting opinions that are not at all based in reality and are largely just completely lost when it comes to having a football conversation. I'd like to think what we talk about is pretty intelligible, and it's also things that you could largely probably repeat, and we're probably not far off, right?
That's the thing is we both know what we're talking about. So
right.
We're not like the Skip Bayless. We're not like the people that are going to sit there and say things that have really little to no basis. In fact,
right.
We're going to tell you, you know, what we saw, how we saw it, and break it down so then you can understand it too. And I think that's another thing that makes us unique.
Exactly. I don't feel like either of us mince words. I don't think that either of us is aggrandizing things. I mean, I have always had a problem exaggerating some things, but I'm literally, the older I get, I just look at the numbers and tell you what I see based on what I look at. That way, if you ever say, oh, there's no way, you could check me. If you're wondering, as we record this podcast, I have about 5 or 6 tabs open, but I have Pro Football Reference open, offense, defense, and then today I'm looking at last year because I wanted to start off with a statement, which you already know, Steven. And then I've got ESPN up, and then I have Stampede Blue up just in case there's some like news that pops that's Colts related while we're on a podcast. It'd probably be ideal if not only we got to that, not Steven and I, but Stampede Blue got to that. And if we're on a podcast and we see it and we're talking about it and we post a podcast, that's all good for us, right? So above all things, it's not just important to support our podcast. Make sure you like Stampede Blue and support them too. And hey, we need a lot more engagement. We need more likes and more shares to grow our community. Our readership's doing fine. Our listenership's doing fine. We're not concerned about those things, but we would like more engagement. That's what we're asking for. And as long as it's constructive, you can largely say whatever you'd like. I want to start this week by pointing this out. I'm part of, as I kind of back out of Facebook slowly, as that, you know, it's like watching a train crash very slowly. As I kind of back out of Facebook slowly and post less and less, I'm still part of some Colts groups. And I still, even in victory, even in a 7-3 start to a season, I'm still seeing a lot of slander on Philip Rivers' name, and I won't stand for it. Stephen Reed, I did a touch of research just to lay this point on the table and say in the 2019 season under Jacoby Brissett, the Colts had about the 24th or 25th best offense in the NFL. You heard what I said.
Yeah.
Bottom quarter of the league. Unacceptable. And by all measures that are like reasonable, and for the record, I'm sure there's somebody out there going like, by what statistic, jarhead? What I look at are things that are very obvious so that people don't feel like I'm talking over your head. When I look at how am I rating your offense, you got to look at total yards, yards per play. I look at turnovers. I look at things like how likely are you to score when you get possession? How likely are you to turn it over? I'll look at your passing offense. I look at how often you get sacked. How often what your quarterback rate is. I like to look at like depth of target as a measure of the quarterback position, but not as of an overall offense. I look at your rushing offense, what your yards per carry are, how many average a game, how often you turn the ball over. And then I kind of mentally look at where are we on these lists every time I'm resorting this on Pro Football Reference. And here's where I'm at. Last year, we were bottom quarter in the league. And this year, we are 10th in the NFL in offense when I consider the whole picture. We are basically in the first quartile, which is where you would like to be offensively. And we don't need to do a deep dive on this Colts defense because this Colts defense is out freaking standing. Stephen Reed.
Yeah. Yeah, the defense is fantastic. The offense is top 10.
Yeah. And so to close what I'm getting at, stop talking poorly about Philip Rivers. Because he already told you he reads what you write. He listens to what you say, and it drives him. And so while there are people on Facebook that think that Philip Rivers has time for that, I can assure you that's not what he's talking about. He's talking about media, talking poorly about Philip Rivers. But yeah, there's no need for Colts fans to do that because you can't back it up with data. And I understand people's concern with touchdown to interception ratio. I can understand that. 14, what is it? 14 and 12, I think. But look at recent, you know, look at the last 4 or 5 weeks for Philip Rivers, and what you'll see is 4 out of the last 5 games had a quarterback rating above 100. That did not happen last year. And if you really want to be that guy, it didn't happen with Andrew Luck in his last season either. So I don't, like I said, I'm not taking any more slander about Philip Rivers. And I get it. When he has a bad game, you can say, hey, he had a bad game. That's all.
But the majority of times, he's going to have an okay to good game.
Yeah. And yeah, he really is.
Better than what Jacoby Brissett gave him last year.
Yeah.
It's pretty consistent. And just as a heads up, people, Tom Brady has more interceptions than Philip Rivers this year.
Yeah, Brady has a prettier – he throws a prettier football, but he is not a better football player.
Tom Brady throws a junk deep ball, and I'll just go ahead and throw it out there.
Yeah, yeah.
For years.
Yeah.
His deep ball is like – it's just a shotgun throw and hope that the receiver – like it's literally a shotgun shot where it just kind of spreads out, and it's not on target at all.
Yeah.
And you hope the receiver can run under it. And you've seen it with Tom Brady for the past decade or so. And it's not been his forte. Yeah, anyway, this is a Colts podcast. Please stop trashing Philip Rivers. Tom Brady sucks.
Yeah, and while we're talking about telling our audience where to center their arguments, feel free to put anyone on blast that speaks well about the Colts rushing offense. It is a foregone conclusion when you lose your leading rusher from the prior season that the run game is no longer a priority. So stop talking about it like it needs to be one. At the best, it is a functional part of our offense. It is in no way going to determine whether we win or lose. That said. How about these rookies? Jonathan Taylor. Woo! Boy can run. Yeah? Are you there? Stephen Reed, can you hear me? Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. pressing buttons. No, what I was saying was it's not just that first pick. It's not just Jonathan Taylor.
No.
Who was the second pick? It's all three of those second round and third round pick right there.
Yeah.
With Michael Pittman, you saw him with that 45-yard catch and run, where he just knifed through the field and he got that gear that we've talked about.
Like right.
He's just consistent. He can make plays when you ask him to. He's got solid hands. I don't know what the reception to target ratio for him was, but I'm pretty sure it was pretty close to 100%. Jonathan Taylor played great. Julian Blackman, he is a rising defensive rookie of the year candidate. He
is a star.
If they had started talking about him, if he was a first or second round pick, he would be the front runner for it. He would be the Derwin James. Right there, you know, in that same category, running up against, you know, a Chase Young. You know, Derwin James obviously went against Darius Leonard that year, but still, it's in that same category where it's a rookie safety making a huge impact and getting accolades from the get-go. Julian Blackman, he has, what, 3 turnovers now in the fourth quarter late in ball games that have affected the outcome?
Right.
Either won the game or put the Colts in a position to win it. That's... What more special. Can you ask for? Like that's what you were hoping you were gonna get from Malik Hooker.
Right.
And you're now getting it from a third round pick. And this just goes again to Chris Ballard and his ability to identify players and take some risks with injury guys and really put these guys in the best position to win.
Exactly. And it's, you know, it's been one of those things that's been really nice to watch. You know, it doesn't take much to just look back, you know, unfortunately, just in the last few years, and a lot of the things that were going on in this franchise just had you shaking your head wondering if we should probably just go back to Baltimore and let them, because they seem to know how to run a franchise, to now, where now it's getting to the point for me where I expect the Colts to draft and approach free agency intelligently, and am shocked when a pick doesn't work out. So for the record, from now on, when it's like draft day, dude, I don't care who we draft. I literally don't care. It was the right pick right then. And then they're going to be right down the road, too.
It's very Bill Polian-esque. Like, with Bill Polian, he took Peyton Manning to start, and then he took Edger and James, and you were kind of scratching your head. You're like, well, maybe you should have taken Ricky Williams there. I don't know. He's the better running back coming out of Texas. Heisman winner and everything. Damn. Then Edge hit, Freeney hit. You saw him take Robert Mathis late.
Uh-huh.
You saw him trade back like six times and take Bob Sanders in the middle of the second round there out of Iowa. I'm bringing it back for you guys with the trap knowledge. but Bill Polian had that same cachet with the fan base where you just said, you know what, and Bill, we trust. And yep. That's kind of how it is right now with Chris Ballard. Is in Ballard, we trust. It's, he's not going to make the decision that's going to put the franchise back. He's going to make smart football decisions. And you love that, especially out of your GM in the draft.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's kind of one of the things I had been envious of watching other franchises in the NFL draft well for the last, you know, well, basically since Bill Polian left, to be frank. But in the last few years, I feel like it has flipped on its head where we used to be envious of other franchises. Now I feel like all eyes are on Indy when it comes to the draft, and when they pick, you can just hear hands smacking foreheads across the league. Like, God, God, we missed that guy. Go ahead.
Here's a story. So we talked about in one of our episodes leading up to the draft, how GMs now, if Chris Ballard is calling you to move up, you're not trading up. You're not letting him trade up because you know
that they there's got a guy.
Somebody in that group or in that range of players that are still available that yep. they really want, and that he's willing to give up a draft pick to go get. Yep. And you know how much he values it. You found that out this past year where they kept trying to trade up in round 5. To get Danny Pinter, and nobody would trade with them. Not a team would trade with them. And they were trying, he said, that Chris Ballard said after the draft, that they were trying so hard to get up to get Danny Pinter, and then nobody was moving with them. That's what it tells you. Like,
yeah.
Unless it's really lopsided, like the round 2 trade when they traded up to get Jonathan Taylor, knowing that they were only dropping back a couple spots there, but they gave up more value than what they probably could have by the chart. And then they got it right back when they dropped back in round 3. So Chris Ballard's a savvy operator, smooth operator.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously you got an entire scouting department that's killing it, and they're all supporting Chris Ballard and Frank Reich. But yeah, I mean, you know, just to be in that meeting room during, like, I think that's a good life goal for me. I would like to be, obviously, COVID, but I would like to be in the room on draft day. That's like a life dream.
I'm going
to
be in the room where it happens.
For the Colts on draft day. Ultimately, I would like to be part of the scouting department.
Room where it happens. Yeah. Come on, sing some Hamilton with us.
I've never seen Hamilton. But yeah, I am not a man of taste.
That's obviously why I wouldn't make you didn't respond. I was like, maybe he didn't hear me. All right, I'll sing a little bit of it. And it, how have you not heard Hamilton? For all those that, that care, Hamilton's a very good, well-written musical. listen to it if you can.
Absolutely.
Don't say absolutely when you haven't done it, Jared.
You're right. And then to kind of talk more about, you know, to gloat about how good the Colts are, even though, and I can say this too, I'm not happy with the amount of interceptions that Philip Rivers has thrown, but I also expected them. So I was kind of in the unique position of being like, you're going to win some and you're going to lose some. That's just kind of the way it goes when Rivers is under the center in shotgun. But I want to point this out. The Colts are like 19th in turnover percentage. So they're like bottom of the league in turning the ball over. And that's with a bunch of picks. So I don't want to hear it. Let it go. Enjoy this. The Colts are good. They're in a very good position. The reality is this. There's one thing you know. If you're a hardcore Colts fan, you've known this forever. You cannot expect to go far in these playoffs without a top-tier defense. You cannot do it. So the fact that the Colts have a top-tier defense should be really eye-opening to not just Colts fans, but to the rest of the league.
And go ahead, keep going.
Well, I was going to say, and I say that to say, if you just look at that Eagles Super Bowl, when Frank Reich was in Philly, that defense was elite, that offense was fleet. That's how you get there. But most importantly, it does tilt a little bit in favor. If your team is real damn good on defense and even special teams, you can win playoff games on that alone. So the reality is that we kind of have it all right now. It's kind of like having pocket aces and then hitting aces on the flop and everybody's betting into you. We're just going to play poker. We already won. We're just going to continue to play poker, right? Because you literally can't lose. I don't know if any of you did not play poker, but basically if you are playing Texas Hold'em, let's say you're playing No Limit Texas Hold'em, and your whole cards are aces, and then the first three cards they flip over, two of those are aces, you've won the hand. Like 99.9% of the time, there is some percentage there where somebody hits a straight.
It's flush. A royal flush.
Or a royal flush.
It's a royal flush. The only thing that can take you out at that point.
Well, yeah.
But
so,
still, the likelihood of that happening,
yeah,
super, super small.
So I make that, you know, comparison to say, now look at the Colts possessing both great offense, great defense, special teams is clicking. Understand the unlikelihood that a rookie kicker in the NFL would be the leading scorer in the league going in to last week's game. And remember how early in the season he missed a kick and people were like, oh, hell.
I think to be fair, those wounds are still pretty fresh. to be totally fair, I was one of those things where it's like, oh God, please don't let this be another kicking issue this year. I don't know if I could deal with that when the biggest story is the kicker.
Yeah.
To extrapolate on what you were talking about there with the terms of the Colts defense, I want to bring up something that near and dear to the Colts Colts fans is when they won the Super Bowl, Super Bowl XLI, what is that, 51? And the reason the Colts won that year was not because of Peyton Manning. It wasn't because of the offense. It was because of the defense. And they were able to shut down teams. For whatever reason, I have it in my head that they went to Baltimore and just kicked field goals the entire game. And that's how they won.
They won on third down.
But
they destroyed people with the pass rush.
Yeah.
They kept the ball in front of them first and second down.
Bob Sanders, who is a difference maker in the defensive backfield. You had linebackers that were capable, and they weren't in the wrong position. You had some good pass rushers. There were great pass rushers in Freeney and Mathis. But the thing was, they had a defense that year. They signed, I think it was Booker McFarland, and maybe Corey Simon was that year too. But Booker McFarland was the midseason trade where they brought in somebody to man that three technique. They're in the middle of that Tampa 2 defense.
Mm-hmm.
That's like Chris Ballard is basically going and making this team like the Tampa Bay team that won the Super Bowl with John Gruden, like the Baltimore team that won the Super Bowl with Trent Dilfer, maybe, or Joe Flacco. Honestly, the two where they won with Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco is not a good quarterback. And then you've got the Chicago Bears against the Colts, that he's trying to build the San Francisco. He's trying to build back these defenses that are able to just take them there and have an offense that is capable enough to keep them in a game. And that's what they've got right now with Phillip Rivers. I still haven't heard anything about Phillip Rivers' ankle injury. Be interested to find out what's going on there, because normally we've heard at least something.
Yeah.
But at this point, we haven't heard anything.
Yeah. And I don't know if Philip listens to our podcast, but you need to stop trying to play football and just throw it.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, nah, you don't need to be crackback blocking.
Do your thing. But,
tackles, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Maybe just like stand in his way a little bit.
Give him the pump fake.
Or like dance.
Yeah.
Like, do like that awkward
dance. Do jumping jack, make him run you over, and then it's a penalty.
No. What you do is, you know how when sometimes you go to the store and like you walk into an aisle and you both are on the same side and then you like do the little like weird dance, like, no, you go this way, and then you both pick the same way to go and it's really awkward.
Yeah.
That's what I want him to do from now on in that situation, is I don't want him to hit the guy.
No.
I just want him to dance.
Yeah.
And that's it.
I want him to pop, just slow him up enough. You know what I mean? I don't need to.
He doesn't need to do it for long.
No! Like, and you're old, too. I mean, I think Philip and I are, like, the same age. If I run into something too hard, I'm breaking. You know? So I get it. Phillip Rivers is a professional athlete, and I'm an old man comparatively. But we're the same age, and I can promise you, it wasn't just his foot. It was everything. I'm positive that when he ran into that larger man that was like 100 pounds heavier than you and way harder, yeah, he hurt like everywhere. The rest of his bell was rung. The whole rest of the game, he was like, shit, that sucked. But yeah. The sticking point ought to be out of this first, before we even talk about the game. Hey, man, stop slandering my quarterback. Colts have the 10th best offense by the numbers. They're 10th in scoring in the league. They were 25th last year. There isn't a comparison. And the defense is lights out. And I would argue, Stephen Reed, not necessarily arguing, because I know you're going to be like, well, duh. Frank Reich now has, in my mind, two notches in his belt, not including the ones he got like in his personal life. Okay? And the first one was winning on the road in Kansas City last year. In my opinion, I don't care about who played, who didn't, who got hurt, who didn't, who played well, who didn't. None of those things matter. W. Going to Kansas City and winning, big damn deal. And then... Well,
to add to that, not only did he win in Kansas City, he won without Darius Leonard.
Yeah.
That game. Like, yeah. So people can say, oh, well, you know, Pat Mahomes got hurt. Yeah, he got hurt late in the second quarter.
Yeah.
They still finished the game, and the Colts were without their defensive star.
Yep. And now, to add to that, in my opinion, the Packers going into this game were one of, I would say, top two or three teams in the NFC and are still top two. They're still winning their division.
I was going to say, I still think, like, I think the Packers, it's Packers Saints for me in some order.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that order is today. Today, I mean, you know, I would say Packers and Saints because Drew Brees is out.
Right.
But it's those two teams, and that's where I'd put them. I don't think Tampa Bay has the consistency to really make a run in the playoffs. And I think Tom Brady is, without Belichick, Brady's still talented, and he's got talented players around him. He's making plays, but he's not the same player without Belichick in his ear.
No, I mean, what I think Bill Belichick probably did is give you the play and tell you the read, right? I'm just guessing, played a little bit of football in my life. I'm willing to bet you Bill Belichick can look at their who came in, who went out on that defense and say, all right, you're going to throw that square into Edelman. This is a play call. And then Brady goes out there and goes, shit, he's open, and hits it. And then he goes to Arians, and Arians is like a wizard, right? So he's trying to teach you magic, Harry. And Tom Brady is like 40 and doesn't believe in magic. So he's just going out there winging it, man. He's like, I don't really care. Like, I hike the friggin' ball. Let's see if I can still huck it. That's literally what it feels like when you watch Tom Brady, is he is out Muggles. There trying to prove it to you that he can still do it. And there are moments where you're like, yeah, he's a wizard. But there's definitely times
like
where you're
a
like
squib, kind of. I feel like
he's, you know what he's like. I can't remember if this happens in Harry Potter at all, but he's like a really talented wizard with a wand that only works like part time.
No, like, this is like part of the storyline in the second book where Ron breaks his wand, and then all of a sudden, like every time he tries to do a spell, it would backfire. Mm-hmm. And the whole, you know, his teacher, like, I'm not going to spoil the second book of Harry Potter for you guys. It's arguably the worst book of the series, but that's neither here nor there. We are not a Harry Potter podcast, but
nope.
We are.
It is a good analogy, though, that.
Yeah, it really is, yeah.
That as long as Dumbledore is alive, Harry has a chance, right? But once you break your wand and Dumbledore's not there anymore. And again, Dumbledore, Belichick, who's actually probably more like Voldemort. Now I'm just really screwing up the analogy, but you get the idea. Tom Brady went to Hogwarts and just his quarterbacking ability basically is stuck in Universal.
Here's your analogy. Tom Brady is Gilderoy Lockhart. Mm-hmm. Really pretty dude.
Yeah.
Really, everybody thinks he's really talented.
Yeah.
And he's able to get people to believe that he's really talented. Ultimately, what it comes down to, he's got a handful of tricks that he's really good at, but yep. He's been relying on the accomplishments of others his entire career. Yeah, if anybody wants to make me to analogize anything, just let me know.
Yeah.
I can probably come up with a pretty good one on the spot.
Specifically, especially if it's Harry Potter at all.
Yeah, if it's Harry Potter, I'll nail it. I promise. I'm very well read up on that. A bunch of other books, too, if you want, you know, throw them out there. I can do what I can. Yeah, you know, ultimately, though, like, I think you're right. Like, this is a huge notch in the belt for Frank Reich to win here against Green Bay. The defense, it's a top defense, but again, they started off slow. They gave up 28 points in the first half, which is something that they can't continue to do.
Right.
Now, the defense shut down Aaron Rodgers in the second half, and if not for a blatant missed holding call on two Green Bay offensive linemen in the end zone, Green Bay doesn't score the second half, period. And part of that is the way that the Colts played, where they just kept the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hands. They were able to force a lot of turnovers. The Green Bay offense just wasn't able to get started. But you know what? That doesn't matter the fact is the defense still held them to 3 points in the second half in overtime. And that's the thing that matters more than anything else.
Yeah.
Because
absolutely.
They couldn't do it. And when it came to the offense, when Frank Reich opened it up, and now that you're starting to see Michael Pittman Jr. really kind of feel out where he fits in this offense, you're seeing him make plays. You're seeing him come in and make those blocks that you expect. You see him catch those crossers and take it to the house. You see T.Y. Hilton getting a little bit less in terms of coverage because teams are going to have to respect Michael Pittman, and they're going to start respecting Jonathan Taylor. Holy moly, boy, was he a load, huh?
Yeah. And like, and the thing about it, that kind of fed into all the hyperbole around what's going on with this Colts rushing offense. Why do we keep running on second and line? Hines up the middle with the F. You know, I can't believe how many times somebody has sent me either a DM or tagged me on Twitter like, what's going on with this offense? And now you understand that, first of all, you got to be consistent, right? There are things that we preach here on this podcast that must happen in order for your offense to be functional. One of them's consistency. So yeah, when they see that the better part of their defense has left the middle of the field, and hey, if we just run this dive, there's a good chance it's 5 to 7 yards. And then if you just go back and watch, you see that in the first half of this game, really the first quarter, what Green Bay was doing on rundowns was just crashing down and just shutting down the run. Hey, that's what you want them to do. You want them to be prepared for the run and stuff the run. That way you can pass now because they're going to be predicated on stopping the run. But then what happened when the Colts went change of pace and stuck Taylor back there and actually ran him, he was a bulldozer. He was unchecked. They were not ready.
Yeah, he loves contact.
Yeah.
And he can initiate it and you saw it in I think every game for the past 3 weeks during this tough section for the Colts. They're going to come out of this at least 2-2.
Right.
And the last game is a home game against a division rival, so you hope they come out 3-1, effectively putting them two games up on Tennessee with 4 or 5 to play. And of those 5 games, it's 5 to play. You've got 2 games against Houston and 1 game against Jacksonville. You feel pretty confident of your team right there to be able to win the AFC South if they're able to win this week. But right. Every single one of these games, Jonathan Taylor has come in and just mowed somebody down. Like, not like Derrick Henry is cute and he'll use his stiff arm and put somebody in the dirt, but he doesn't just mow people down like Jonathan Taylor's done.
No, he's running out of bounds a lot. He's staying on his feet the whole game. Jonathan Taylor will literally just bulldoze you. He'll just run you over and just keep going and take 3 or 4 people with him to take him down. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things where, you know, the first few weeks of the season, everybody's like, oh, no, he's Trent Richardson running with his head down, running right into the back of his offensive lineman, you know, taking the wrong hole or trying to hit a closing hole or, you know what I mean, like making some questionable decisions. And you see how that decision making has changed. And now he's kind of realized I got to hit the hole hard and then just keep driving my legs. And he's powerful. And here's what else I've noticed. And this is more of an overarching thought process. Most of these teams ain't ready for the Colts. And I mean is the Colts will hit you in the mouth and start the fight. And the problem,
I was going to say, yeah.
And the problem with that is it being an instigator by not being afraid to put a lick on somebody. And I've been saying this. I said it after the Baltimore game. Most teams that you play, when your defense crushes their offense, you just win. That game just doesn't go well for the opposing team. They're going to be fighting on the sideline. Defense is going to be complaining about not getting enough rest. Offense is complaining because they can't get anything going and their guys are getting rocked. And we're turning the ball over, and we're not converting on third downs. We're kicking field goals if we're getting in the scoring position. You see, we're wearing on other teams. That's what we're doing. We're showing up to fight, starting the fight, and then here's the reality we live in. In the Baltimore game, from my perspective, once the Colts punched them in the mouth, they started cheap shotting us. And it injured, dinged up a couple players, and it affected the outcome. I can say that. I would say that to John Harbaugh himself. We punched you in the face, and then you cheap shotted us the rest of the game to try to keep yourselves in it. And yeah, you won, sure, but you didn't play us straight up and down like you're gonna have to do in the playoffs. So what has happened since is teams have realized that isn't gonna fly, right? You're just gonna lose players if you play dirty, right? So you got to try to play the Colts honestly. So what do you think happened? Why do you think Jonathan Taylor did so well? I'll tell you. It's because they were expecting a bunch of Nyheim Hines, and so they were like, we need to put a little more speed on the field. We're going to get a little smaller and a little lighter and a little faster side to side to try to put the handle on Nyheim Hines. And people are going to be like, did they, though? Yeah, they did, because he had 6 carries for 2 yards and 3 catches for 31 yards. That's not a great output out of Hines. Why is that? Well, the defense decided that's the person they were going to limit.
Well, and Frank Reich did a really good job in this game of, moving guys around, keeping the rotation fresh, and going with a hot hand, which is something that he said that they were going to do all year.
Yeah.
And so when you hear coaches say that, you kind of go, yeah, sure.
Yeah, but we'll see.
What are you really going to do?
Right. Run on second and long.
Yeah, well, that's we know that's what he's going to do there.
At least run a draw. Something.
But what Green Bay did, and what I don't understand about Green Bay, and specifically their defense and defensive coordinator, is why they played so much dime. So what dime is when you have 6 defensive backs on the field.
Yeah. That's just getting lighter to defend Nyheim.
Yeah, you're putting less weight on the field. Nickel is 5 defensive backs. It's 5. That's why they call it nickel. Dime is 6 because they just like coins, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, so Green Bay was pretty consistent in playing in nickel and dime defense. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so
was that an availability thing or a game plan thing?
I think that was a game plan thing.
Okay. See? It's feeding my point, right? So I'm just clarifying with Steven that what I just got done saying and what he's saying, they're incongruent, right? So they're congruent. We're going the same direction.
It was a game plan thing because it just seems like you could have probably gotten guys in or played with a little bit bigger of a lineup. But you saw Green Bay fans afterwards complaining about the defense and the defensive coordinator and why are they playing with these light lineups when you've got a team that for the first half and into the second half was just running it down your throat.
Yeah.
Like that's all they were doing. Like Frank Reich came into this game and said, I am not going to let Aaron Rodgers beat me if I don't have to.
Well, I think what they realized, and I said it in my post game rap video,
I really want Aaron, you to actually rap in it.
Hey, if I got paid a lot of money to do that, I would like write a rap during the game because otherwise it takes away from the enjoyment of the game if I'm having to prepare to write that. And I try to do that live, one cut, no edit as well, just because it's a challenge to try to get it all in 5 minutes without having to edit it or reshoot it. I just try to do it off the cuff one time. That's a dream, right? Sometimes you got to do that a couple times. But
Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers, though, I said on Sunday, he's one of the very few quarterbacks in the NFL that I actually believe he's just going to get his, and you're just going to have to hope that you can contain him. Yeah, I'd say the same about a Patrick Mahomes. Normally, I'd say that about a Russell Wilson. Now you have to kind of add Josh Allen to the mix, where Kyler Murray too, Deshaun Watson too.
Watson has played so well this year.
Yeah, he's doing great.
It's such a tragedy that Bill O'Brien just wrecked that franchise. I mean, I laugh.
Right.
Like over here because like we benefit from it, but like right. I really wish Deshaun Watson could get out of his deal and get to a team that actually cares for him. like we would in Indianapolis.
Yeah, for sure. I would love to have Deshaun Watson as our quarterback behind that offensive line. Woo! But yeah, Aaron Rodgers is just one of those players that in my opinion, that's an opinion. Aaron Rodgers is just one of those players. He's going to get his. Same with Devontae Adams. I said that on Sunday too. Devontae Adams, just one of those guys, just like a DeAndre Hopkins, right? Just gonna get theirs. You have to game plan knowing it's gonna happen. But here's what we know. In the first half of football games, as long as the Colts can keep it close, they can beat anybody from any score. They're gonna keep it respectable. And then what this team does is at halftime, it's like they're doing research the first half. At halftime, everybody does a presentation. And then second half, completely different ball game. Shut them down on offense and ran them over, or shut them down on defense and ran them over on offense. It was a completely, you know, we frequently in sports media get to hear the tale of two halves, right? But the Colts make sure it happens.
Gosh, yeah. They've been so good.
A shadow of a doubt, is one thing you know will happen is we will unscrew this at halftime. Like, whatever is going wrong, it'll get fixed. They'll fix that. And you could just about set your clock to it. Because, like you said, gave up 28 points in the first half, down two touchdowns. But here's the thing. You've been down more than that in prior games this year and come back. So there was no chill. That's what the Colts have, no chill. They do not care. You could be beating them by touchdowns. And what they're going to do is they're going to go into halftime. They're going to figure out what they were doing wrong. They're going to get it corrected in the locker room and come out and execute. And it's a beautiful thing to see when you have the talent. You have the balance, right? We're not a one-trick pony, right? When we talk about other teams, right? When you talk about Aaron Rodgers in this offense, Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams, and Aaron Jones, from my perspective, are the conversation pieces for the Green Bay offense. For the record, Aaron Jones had 10 carries for 41 yards, about 4 yards a carry, and a touch. But 15 of those yards came on one play, so that means he had 9 carries for 31 yards, and math tells me that's just a shade over 3 yards a carry. So the Colts took Aaron Jones out of the game, which they tend to do because they are going to stop the run, right? But once they shut your run game down and turn you into a one-trick pony, the only good thing happening outside of Robert Tonyan, 5 catches on 5 targets with a touchdown, was Devontae Adams. He was the only thing keeping them even remotely in this game. And he made great receptions time after time. He's very difficult to defend. And I've kind of realized one or two guys aren't going to beat you. It's when you're the Colts. It's going to take the goon squad in order to actually overcome. And when I say the goon squad, I was really talking about Space Jam and not at all referencing the Ravens. Phillip Rivers had himself a ball game, 24 for 36, 66% completion percentage. Phillip Rivers is 12th in the NFL in that category. For comparison purposes, Jacoby Brissett, 58.6, I believe, last year. Good for like 24th. So we're completing a much higher clip of our passes. 288 yards, 3 touchdowns. Again, picked once, sacked once. The downside, from my perspective, if I have anything to harp on in this football game, and of course, you can always chime in with where and whenever you'd like. But from my perspective, the downside of this game is Phillip Rivers got hit 5 times. And I don't like that. I would prefer if your uniform were clean and your back didn't hurt, Mr. Rivers. That's just kind of the way we like to roll.
Part of that was after he took that, you know, Green Bay was doing a pretty good job of their blitzes and pressures. And so they got a couple clean shots at him. And then after he took that, after he made that block, injured his ankle, that put him in a position where he really was less mobile. And for somebody that already is not mobile, that was kind of a huge issue for him. I'm not as concerned about Phillip Rivers as long as his injury doesn't linger.
Yeah, as long as that's not like a foot break. You know, he didn't break a bone in his foot or his ankle. It's one of those things, ice, elevation, he'll be fine. Because one thing we do know is, not Jacoby. But wanted to point out, kind of looking at the game by the numbers, I believe 11 different players caught passes for the Colts on Sunday, which feels like a ton. It shows you that the Colts are not a two-trick or a one-trick pony, right? There's balance in that there are threats at every position, not just Colts have Marlon Mack and T.Y. Hilton, right? That's a two- or three-trick pony, kind of depending on your quarterback. This year, it could really – the thing we haven't really seen yet is Hines, Taylor, and Wilkins all do well on the same day. Like,
yeah.
The world will surely end because these backs singularly every game somebody just goes to town on the opposing defense. And if you could just put it together, the Colts could easily see this team rushing for 200 plus yards if they got Taylor and Mack going, or if we're just talking about this year, if you got Taylor and Wilkins going and then Hines out of the backfield to receive, to be a primary pass catcher, I really feel like you could run for a couple hundred yards a game easy, because those are both Wilkins and Taylor are just better runners of the football. And then when it comes to the receivers and tight ends and running backs, Philip Rivers, man, he likes to spread it around. He loves his tight ends. They caught two touchdowns on Sunday. It was good to see Jack get in the end zone. A lot of people recently, I'd seen a few comments recently in, you know, kind of indie and Colts media about people saying Jack Doyle was washed. And while I'm not questioning necessarily the validity of that statement, it was nice to see Jack get in the end zone. Additionally, Trey Burton, I believe that was his first touchdown too. First touchdown catch. Oh, I think we'd be wrong. Caught one last week.
No, he had one game where he had like a passing touchdown, a rushing touchdown, and a receiving touchdown, something like that. I think maybe. Yeah, I forget which game it was, but yeah. It's one of those things where you look at the offense and you see the progress. You see these guys that are getting, you see Jonathan Taylor getting more used to the system and more comfortable in the system. And for opposing teams, that should be terrifying, because you've got, you know, Tennessee was able to squeak by Baltimore this week on the back of Derrick Henry, who literally won the game for them.
Right.
And that's a game that the Colts fans, we obviously had hoped that they would lose, but they pulled it out somehow. In their typical Tennessee fashion, where they're going to end up finishing the season 2-4, so they can continue to go 9-7 under Mike Vrabel, which is their record for the past 3 years, every single year. And so I look at this game against Green Bay is a good measuring stick to see where they're at. You see that there are definitely places where they need to get that defense figured out in the first half. If they don't, they're going to be in trouble against a team like Kansas City, who you're probably not going to stop Kansas City the way that you stopped Green Bay this year. You were able to stop them last year. It's a very different Kansas City team than what it was last year.
They're almost automatic on offense.
I'll say this. I don't think Kansas City is this unbeatable force in the AFC. You've got people that in national media that are saying, well, it's Kansas City from the AFC and then one of these four teams from the NFC. And I'm going, well, I think you're overlooking teams like the Colts, like the Steelers, who can probably give Kansas City a pretty good run for their money. Outside the Colts and Steelers, I'm not certain there's another team that I would trust to even try to compete with Kansas City, because like the Buffalo Bills are leading right now the AFC East, and they're good. They're 7-3. They got a good record. But there's not anything about that team that just scares me versus Pittsburgh. Yeah, but I mean, you got Josh Allen, who's all over the map with his throws sometimes. And you've got Kansas City, who has Patrick Mahomes. He scares you. You've got Pittsburgh, who has some legit defensive playmakers, and Ben Roethlisberger, who has got a stud wide receiver in Chase Claypool, and is a guy that Chase Claypool in the draft was kind of a frustrating prospect for me, because it seemed like he should probably be moved to like that X receiver, that big tight end, move tight end. He's proven so many of us wrong in how well he's played, with defenses focusing on Juju Smith-Schuster and Deontay Johnson. He's been able to really shine, but you've got Big Ben back there, a quarterback who can make plays and cause some issues for teams. So outside of those guys, though, like, I don't think anybody else in the AFC really scares me.
No, it feels like everyone else in the AFC, you can really button down a game plan for. And I agree with you. I think when the dust settles, I think you'll be looking at Kansas City, Indianapolis, Pittsburgh, and
I think it's those three teams. Yeah. It's one of those three teams that is going to be in, or two of those three are going to be in the AFC championship game. And I don't think that there's any question on that. Like, Tennessee, I don't think is good enough on defense, especially, and we'll probably get to this here in a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
We talk about the game. They're going to be without Jaylen Brown for the rest of the season. He broke his arm, or he's got injured and now will be out for the rest of the season, I think. Or at least he got placed on IR. He was their leading tackler. Was a Pro Bowl type linebacker this year. Could have potentially been an All-Pro, but probably not. But they were, they're a little dinged up. Tennessee is.
Yeah, and additionally, in addition to being banged up, they're kind of a two-trick pony on offense, right? Like we've kind of said, like, they got Derrick Henry, they have AJ Brown.
Yeah, like, and they don't have anything beyond that. Like,
there's no one outside those two players.
Tannehill isn't a guy you want to stick your wagon to and say, lead me to the promised land. Like, you want to put that.
He's going to lead you to 150 yards passing, is what he's
saying. Yeah, on multiple games total. And so, like, you want to ride Derrick Henry if, this will. Again, maybe we'll just start talking about this week's game. And if the Colts can get out in front and like their defense actually comes out to play, force a couple three and outs to start the game rather than giving the other team a couple touchdowns to start the game, would be a nice change of pace for the defense. But if they can get out ahead of Tennessee, you're going to see like an entirely different defensive unit to where the Colts can really take advantage of the fact that they can get to Tannehill by rushing four. They can have a spy with Darius Leonard, just kind of keeping an eye on the running backs out of the backfield, those little check down passes to tight ends, things like that. You're going to be able to make some plays on the ball and get some more turnovers that, in the past you weren't able to get because you were down. So you're kind of playing into your own strength, and that you got down by like 14, 21 points. So then teams would run the ball against you, and you're really good against the run. So maybe that's the whole play, is that they try to get it to where they can force some three and outs. I don't know. It's like 3D level chess here that they're playing. But I don't like it. I don't like having them get down early so much, so often.
No.
But this game will obviously make a huge, huge statement in the division. If the Colts can come out and win this game, they're effectively two games up on Tennessee, because they'd have the season sweep. Mm-hmm. There'd be five games left to play. The only two games really for the Colts that would scare you is at Oakland in week 14 and at Pittsburgh week 16.
Quick note about Pittsburgh. Bro, they haven't played anybody.
Yeah.
They haven't played anybody.
Well, yeah, they're still 10-0. It does, like, for I look at that and I go, all right.
They're 2-0 with a bunch of cupcakes outside of that.
Titans
and Ravens are their two decent wins. But think about it. Jags, Bengals, Cowboys, that's their last three opponents. Get out of town. And then outside of
especially Titans, with Bengals without Burrow.
Yeah. Like, man, like, Steelers ain't played nobody. That's why they're 10-0. But the thing about it is, I was more worried about Pittsburgh. The longer the season wears on, the more I'm like, we'll be fine. Obviously we could sit and talk about the AFC South for just a moment before we get into this game with the Titans. Colts are 7-3. Titans are 7-3. Colts do currently have the tiebreak because they won the prior contest against the Titans. Houston won last week. I'm not sure why. They're 3-7.
It doesn't matter for them for draft position, because they gave their first and second round pick to Miami.
For nothing.
I'll keep reminding you guys of that.
Right.
That Bill O'Brien gave up their first round pick. It's going to be a top 15 pick. Could be a top 10 pick for a left tackle that they didn't immediately sign to a long-term contract. And he was able to get himself massive, massive contract from them because they had to give him that.
And then, of course, the bottom of the barrel in the AFC South, the Jacksonville Jaguars, who got beat by the Pittsburgh Steelers. So there's kind of your picture of the AFC South. And like I said, you could disparage your opponents, but I prefer not to kick people when they're down, with the exception of the Titans. And we'll do that after we beat them on Sunday. When you look at the numbers, there are two things that stick out like a sore thumb in this football game. And I'm hoping to surprise you. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
The Colts have missed the least tackles of any team in the NFL, and it's not really close. The Colts are the surest tacklers in the NFL by the numbers. And then the Titans' defense is the worst at getting pressure on a quarterback in the NFL. They have the lowest pressure percentage. I think just those two things alone is a recipe for a non-ball game. Especially when your opponent's leading tackler, like you said, is out now. That would be like taking Darius Leonard away from the Colts. Or Darius and Kenny Moore, probably. Right? It would be like taking really important people away from the Colts and expecting the same results you got. Well, the Colts did, of course, clean house in that prior contest. We got them all over the field, right? This is a 34-17. This is a non-ball game. Obviously, it's worth talking about. You got to say it. Derrick Henry, leading rusher in the NFL. They lean on Derrick Henry. He's their entire offense. And the Colts' defense is predicated on limiting the opponent's rushing game. So, again, that kind of plays into what the Colts want to do, is force you to air it out against this quagmire that is our secondary. And I say that because the Colts have just generated a ton of turnovers in their secondary. And it's to me, I wouldn't want a game plan against this Colts defense because I'm not quite sure where the holes are. I don't see them. The secondary is gonna
not any right now. Like that's
they're not injured.
The Colts defense is they're healthy and they're like you're arguably the one thing that people will harp on is Rock Ya-Sin being a little bit up and down on in the terms of his play.
But he had a
he's
pick
been
last
pretty
week.
Good.
Yeah.
Like he baited Aaron Rodgers into a pick. And he got beat over the top on like a play or he got called for a pass interference where the offensive player initiated the contact and then hooked Yassine's arm. And then Yassine at that point, he's gonna get called for a pass interference because it looks like there's an arm hook.
Right.
And that always goes against the defender. And so like that's the crazy thing is that was just a really savvy route by Marquise Valdes-Scantling and arm placement to get that pass interference call. But as a whole, like the Colt, like Xavier Rhodes has been a revelation. It's something that we talked about on this podcast back when they made that signing. Mm-hmm. Is that we expected to see more of this, and something that we also brought up was how one of the big benefits was. Of Xavier Rhodes was the fact that he was open to being a mentor to Rock Ya-Sin and the young cornerbacks. And lo and behold, we get an article out by, I forget whether it was through the guys at the Athletic or Indy Star, about how Rock Ya-Sin and Xavier Rhodes immediately built a friendship up after Rhodes was signed and he took him under his wing and started mentoring. Like, that's something that we all kind of said that would likely happen. When Xavier Rhodes is signed, we're glad to see it does. It is, and it did happen. But then you've got Kyrie Willis back there, Julian Blackman, and the safeties that are playing great. You've got the best linebacker room in the NFL. I don't think that that's much of a question mark there, because you've got Darius Leonard, Anthony Walker, Bobby Okereke. Those are the three best line. That's the best linebacker group in the NFL, and I don't think that's crazy to say. You have Grover Stewart and DeForest Buckner, who are the best defensive tackle pairing in the NFL. And I don't think that that's crazy to say. That you've got competent defensive ends that are consistently showing out, like with Justin Houston, Tanico Autry. Tyquan Lewis has played great this year. Kamoka Ture is getting his feet wet again. Al-Qadim Muhammad. Like the Colts' depth on that defensive line is absolutely sick.
Yeah. And the thing about it was they told you they were going to do it, and then they went out and did it. They said that this team will be built through the trenches, and for all the talk, for the record, I guess we haven't really gone down this road yet, for all the talk about the Colts' offensive line regressing, apparently none of you have ever been bullied. That's real talk. Because I can promise you, if you had to go up against the Colts offensive line, you are having a come to God meeting as that defense, knowing, hey man, if you don't come to play like it's the last game you will ever play in on Sunday, they're going to embarrass us. And I know, Jared, every team comes at the Colts like it's going to be a street fight. Because that's how the trenches go. And flatly, no, that's not how it goes. There are teams that cannot hang. And when the Colts offense gets out there, that offensive line just mows them over and it's over. And we've had games like that this year. I can think of two, Chicago and Minnesota, where the Colts offensive line just roadmapped those defenses. And I understand that they've had their moments where you're like, what in the hell? I thought this was supposed to be the best O-line in the NFL. That's why Philip Rivers came here. Hell, I'd have stayed in California if that was the case. I get that. But that's because, and feel free to jump in anytime. This is because defenses have to take this very seriously, because what do I keep saying? When one of you is doing really well and you are just going to mow someone down and the other person can't hang so they don't go 100%, what happens? People get hurt. So the reason that these teams are and I would call it standing up to the bully, the Colts offensive line is the bully. These teams have to stand up to your O-line because they can't beat your D-line. So the only great equalizer is effort. And I feel like I'm a big dude. I like to watch what's going on in the trenches. You notice those guys aren't fighting. People aren't getting tossed. Guys aren't getting hurt. They're doing their job. And they're forcing the other guy to do your job. Because if you don't, I'm going to embarrass you. And we've watched Quentin Nelson kick people's ass all over the field for not doing their job. For not disengaging from a block. So for the record, when you see Quentin Nelson running somebody down the field and just running him over, that's because that guy didn't do his job and disengaged a block. He let Quentin Nelson get into his chest and just push him down the field until he runs him over. And that's when he saw him last year dancing on people's corpses, right? Is because teams weren't ready for the Colts offensive line. Now teams have to, like I said, I'm repeating myself ad nauseum, but now you have to really take them serious, and that's causing more of a game. It's better that the Colts offensive line is like known, because now you got to play it straight up or they'll beat you up. And I think that bodes well for the Colts, because like I said, you have two options now. You better put your all and hope you get into 50-50 the whole game and just everybody has a decent game, played it clean across the board, you know, made some tackles, made some plays, but, you know, that offensive line's good and you feel like you gave them a game, because the alternative is getting run over. Or like I said in the Baltimore game, cheap shotting our players to sort of kind of equalize. Because like I said, if you aren't prepared for this Colts offensive line, they'll hurt you in a myriad of ways. And it's not just running the ball down your throat. It's pass protection. Philip Rivers has been very well protected this year on passing downs. If I have any sort of just off the top of my head thoughts about this Colts offense, I would really like the Colts to get the ball out quicker and be more fleet on offense, to use a new term. Thanks, Twitter. But yeah, I would like to see Philip Rivers get the ball out of his hands sooner. I don't want to see him get in happy feet and get wrapped up and tossed around like a rag doll. Again, I don't know that anybody affiliated with the Colts listens to us, but there's no shame in throwing the football away. I don't know. Somebody out there will hear this. You could just throw it away. You don't have to take those hits, and that would be my really only beef. Other than that, just like to see the offense continue to do what it's doing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's just trying to just have them keep moving like they do the ball or they do in the second half of every game. And yeah, the Colts can just put a full game together that's just how they play in the second half every week.
Right. So,
like, they would be blowing people out like 40.
They'd be scoring 60 points in a game.
And the opponent wouldn't score at all.
Right. It would be crazy just to see him come out and just blank somebody and score, like, you know, remember a few years ago that Bills Patriots 56-3. It's literally like the perfect football game. And if you're a Patriot, but yeah, that's the idea here is, and now that you say it, now it kind of even makes you think this is even less of a game, but I say that. And Mike Vrabel is a competent NFL coach. And
yeah, Mike Vrabel is a good NFL coach. He gets his players ready for the game. I expect them to be ready for this game.
Yeah.
Because it really does. If Tennessee doesn't win this game, they don't win the division.
Right. It's their entire season.
Yeah. And if they don't, like, they've got a team that could win on the road, but it's infinitely harder to win on the road in the playoffs. Although without fans, who knows how that's going to change things. You know, it's not like the NFC where if you're that first wild card, you get to go to the AFC or the NFC East champion and play a team that didn't finish above 500, but somehow it was a playoff game. It's one of those situations where Tennessee really, they've got to win this game if they want to have any shot at the division.
Absolutely. And now we kind of spoke at length here about this upcoming game. You got anything else for you to jump in this NFL
no,
pick 'em
let's jump into
get out of here? Yeah.
No, let's jump into pick 'em.
Okay, so we'll always save the Colts for last. So if you're listening to this and thinking, wait, what about the Colts? It's coming. Just hang in there for a moment. Understand, Thursday is Bird Day, Thanksgiving. There are 3 football games on Thursday. The first game starts at 12:30. I know you're like, okay, Jared. Steven, I'm going to say that again. Thursday is Thanksgiving. There are 3 NFL games on Thursday. The first game starts at 12:30. They should just rename Thanksgiving to International Football Day. Or, you know what I mean? Like, it's just the most NFL on a weekday you'll ever see in your life. And on Thursday, man, there's some great football not being played on Thursday. That's for sure. The Texans play at the Lions. And
I'm going to go with the Texans.
And they're a favorite on the road. Yeah, the Lions, if I understand correctly, didn't they just get blanked? Like 24-0?
Yeah, it wasn't pretty.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I think, yeah, they got beat 20-0 by the Panthers. Haha, Jared, right one time.
The Panthers, who did not have Teddy Bridgewater and played.
Or CMC. Yeah. Yeah, the Texans get a win on the road. That's an important win for a team that doesn't get good news often. Texans should win that football game. The Washington football team plays at the Cowboys.
I'm going to take the Washington football team here.
So am I. And of all the players in the NFL, Alex Smith, comeback player of the year for sure. Come back off a gruesome leg injury. That by every account possible, like I talked to several people that have had pretty bad lower leg injuries that were like, dude, if Alex Smith even throws a football full speed standing up ever again in his life, I would be shocked, that are now saying like, dude, he's a god. Like he threw for almost 400 yards coming back off that. And I just don't, you know, as much as, well, I don't have any faith in Andy Dalton, but I just have more in Alex Smith. I think they've got good weapons. Terry McLaurin, Antonio Gibson, they've actually got a competent offense. I'm kind of with you there. And then Thanksgiving Eve, 8:20, probably the game of the week, real talk, outside of Colts.
Not Thanksgiving Eve, it's Thanksgiving night.
Thanksgiving night, sorry. The Ravens play at the Steelers. Who do you think wins this game?
What's the line on it? Steelers by like 2.5?
Pitt by 5.5, but we know home team gets 3. So they're basically saying Steelers win by a field goal at home, is what Vegas thinks. It was a 28-24 game last time in Baltimore. Pittsburgh won.
Obviously. You know what? I'm going to go all road on Thanksgiving and just go with Baltimore because I want the Steelers to lose so then they actually have to play their starters week 16 and the Colts can beat them then.
Yeah, I always want to see my opponent at full strength. Now, that said, I'm also in the same breath basically going to say I agree with you that I want the Ravens to win this game on the road because I do not like perfection. I want...
That's why he doesn't like me as much.
A little more parody. I want a little more interest. I want to feel...
Well, you know, I want the Steelers to win, so the Colts are the team that knocks them off.
There you go. There you go. Hey, that's perfectly acceptable.
Picking Steelers now.
Changing his pick now. Now, yeah. On Sunday, so you get a few days of sleep after Turkey Day, and then on Sunday the Raiders play at the Falcons.
The Raiders.
Yeah. Falcons can't get out of their own way. The Chargers play at the Bills.
Probably the Bills.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Giants, Bengals, and what might be the saddest football game of all time?
I feel like it's got to be the Giants.
Yeah, they got a top 13 defense to the Giants. So they're actually pretty good on defense. That tends to do well for you when your opposing team's starting quarterback basically destroyed his knee. So wish for a full and speedy recovery for Joe Burrow. Real talk, the best thing to happen to Ohio in a long since LeBron. Man, yeah, he's so important to that franchise.
Tragic that he got ripped like that.
Yeah. MCL, ACL, LCL, other ligament damage. I don't even normally hear other ligament damage when we hear about knee injuries. So for that, it was just, oh, that sucks. And the best picture of all, I'm lumping up even thinking about it. The best picture from Sunday, I get it. A lot of people are like, man, this is a Colts podcast. This got weird. The best picture from Sunday was Chase Young with his head on Joe Burrow's head. Those are opponents in the midst of battle. And Chase Young put his head on his head. Those guys went to school together. They played together for a little bit. And I just felt like it was an important moment. And in that moment, that, hey, you could be mortal enemies in opposite uniforms. But when you have the kind of history that these college programs do, yeah, it goes beyond the current franchise you're with, because you kind of never know what happens, right? And then the Panthers play at the Vikings. That'd be an interesting football game, actually, if Teddy's back.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the Vikings.
Yeah, they've seemed to kind of right the ship. I mean, I say that they're 4-6, and they are 1-4 at home.
We're not gonna make the obvious connection with the Vikings jokes riding a ship.
Yeah, did you like that?
Yeah.
Okay. Not going to acknowledge that. And then the Cardinals play at the Patriots.
I'm going to take the Cardinals in that game.
Yeah, of course, I want the Cardinals to win. The only downside is I kind of feel like the Patriots, similar to the Vikings, have sort of kind of... Actually, I can't do it. Cardinals get a win on the road.
Because, like, the Patriots shouldn't have won against Baltimore 2 weeks ago.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
Because the only reason they won is because there was a literal hurricane that came through Foxborough, Massachusetts. Like, and so you have a team that relies on speed and getting outside with Baltimore and being able to do ball handling, basically, and they couldn't do it. Like... That's the only reason New England won against Baltimore is because Mother Nature said, Baltimore, you're not winning today.
And hey, you know, I think the Executive of the Year award, if it doesn't go to like Ursae Ballard, right, kind of that, the Colts staff, this should go to the Cardinals for absolutely fleecing the Texans out of DeAndre Hopkins. And then, it's not so much that they fleeced them. Like, they absolutely destroyed them on this deal. But then Hopkins and Murray are, like, sharing a wavelength on the field. They're like, in each other's head, like, I'm not open, don't throw it, don't even look my way. You know what I mean? Like, but he's 30 yards away running full speed. Shout out Cardinals ownership for actually like now that the Texans are now like the butt of a lot of jokes, but they weren't quite there until that happened. And then it was like, who makes this decision? Other than the former head coach and GM who is no longer with the Texans, Bill O'Brien. But yeah, then the Dolphins play the Jets, in New York against the Jets. Obviously, that's pretty cut and dry. Dolphins are
6-4.
And
Dolphins are a pretty good team this year.
One game out of the division behind Buffalo, playing the 0-10 Jets. It's kind of obvious. Did want to point this out. I saw Frank Gore on a Zoom call with his head down talking about he's never gone winless. And as
probably
a
in his entire back, football player.
Nah, man. He went to University of Miami. They're actually good when he went. It's kind of sad for Frank that Jets franchise is in trouble. And then the Browns play at the Jags, and you know, Stephen Reed, the Browns are 7-3.
Yeah. You know what's funny though is at the beginning of the season I picked my teams that I thought would make the playoffs, and I picked the Browns as a wild card.
Yeah.
You know, I felt pretty confident about that it would be the Browns, Steelers, and Browns, Steelers, and Ravens, all from that division,
make
the playoffs. Yeah.
I don't doubt that.
I'll have to go back and check to see what my other team was in there.
Yeah, the Browns are 7-3, the Jags are 1-9, and Jags are hapless. That's kind of, they're just hapless. And the Browns, while I don't believe that they are world beaters, I think that they're coming up on the short end of a playoff game this year. The Browns are in just a much more positive environment right now than Jacksonville. And then at 4 o'clock, or 4:05, the Saints play at the Broncos. Again, pretty clear here. You know, Broncos are the most injured team in the NFL.
Yeah, the Broncos have been just ravaged with injuries all year.
So got to figure the Saints move to 9-2, and that's frankly whether Drew Brees plays or not. And I will be the first to admit that I put my foot in my mouth when it came to talking about Taysom Hill. Had himself a good football game. Passed for about 242 yards, a couple touchdowns, ran the ball too. Looked every bit the part of a quarterback. It did not remind me of Tim Tebow. But that said, now that he's got tape on wax, now teams get the game plan for you. And trust me, he's coming down from that cloud. I didn't say it was this week. And then the 49ers play the Rams in what would have been game of the week material.
I don't get to pick the Saints Broncos game.
Why, if you're picking the Broncos,
I thought about it honestly, but they're so injured. I gotta go.
I think I saw their IR list. Easy 100 million, and it was like 14 starters. And I might be exaggerating by like one or two players. But like
not that far off.
I think it was either 12, 13, or 14, and I'm not even a fan of the Broncos. I just was like, that's a starter they're all starters. That's awful. So yeah, Saints win just showing up. 49ers play at the Rams. Rams are just one of those teams. They're very Jekyll and Hyde, right? Year to year, really, they didn't change a lot personnel-wise, who their primary ball catchers, you know. That didn't change, really. This year they're hitting on all cylinders.
Sometimes.
That's what I'm saying. They're Jekyll and Hyde. Like 70% of their games, they came to play. And then the Chiefs play. Ooh, that'll be a football game. The Chiefs play at the Bucks. 4:25 on Sunday. That's a football.
You know, game. Here's the thing. I don't think that's going to be a football game. Do you think the Chiefs are going to run them out?
Yeah, I say that to say Chiefs are a 3.5-point favorite on the road, and we buy that all day long. I'm just saying, this is a 10-point ball game in the first quarter, and I'd be surprised if the margin didn't widen. So, for those of you looking for betting tips, that's about where you're gonna find me. Is putting my money on that Chiefs game, and then the Bears play at the Packers. Sunday Night Football.
I think that is a Packers probably W right there.
Yeah, I think that Aaron Rodgers not the kind of quarterback to drop two in a row. Probably not. Just not losing at home to that Bears offense is pretty much where I am. If I'm Aaron Rodgers, like, there's no way that they outscore us. Come on. And then Monday Night Football, the Seahawks play at the Eagles. Who are you thinking of that?
Seahawks. Like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Crazily, the Eagles 3-6-1 and still in their division race.
They're winning their division.
They're winning. I thought there was somebody
leading. They're leading their division.
Nobody's 4-7.
3-7.
Oh, that's awful. Yeah, that's awful. Sure. So yeah, the Seahawks.
And here with the Colts and Titans.
Yeah, we do. Big old game for all the marbles, pretty much. For most of the marbles.
I think the Colts win this game by 3 touchdowns.
No. Really? No. I was like, damn. So basically, Brayton gets COVID and stays home with the game plan is what what Steven thinks. No, I think that unlike the previous contest, which was not a ball game, it was a big old nothing burger. Here's the rub. Derrick Henry got a lot of mileage last week. And the Colts typically handle the opposing runner. And unlike the prior contest where Derrick Henry did have a great game, I do kind of think the Colts shut Derrick Henry down, forced Ryan Tannehill to throw, and it ain't a pretty day. And I think the Colts do win by double digits again, but it's more like 10 points.
Yeah. I think the Colts win. I think it is going to be, for whatever reason, the Colts really haven't blown people out, with the exception of like the Jets in Minnesota. Here's going to be the tale of the game is if the Colts can shut the Titans offense down in the first half, I think the Colts win by double digits.
Yeah.
If Tennessee gets out off the bat and scores two touchdowns in the first quarter, I think it's going to be a close game. I think the Colts end up winning it. I'm going to say it's going to be a 4-point game. Between 4-7. And so I'll put it at, say, 31-24 Colts.
Okay.
I don't know what the over-under is for the game.
Over-under is 51. Colts are a 3.5-point favorite. So your four-point prediction.
I'm right there.
Right on the numbers. Yeah, I think the Colts are just healthy. And
Tennessee,
it's something. Tennessee is not healthy. They do not have a variety of weapons. They don't have anything to fall back on. If, you know, there's two real ifs for me in this game. There's if Derrick Henry and if AJ Brown. And I think the Colts have the personnel to limit both of those players when they're on defense. And then when their Colts are on offense, this Tennessee Titan defense is not, it's not what you think it could be. Even when they were fully healthy, they're like the 20th ranked defense. So that's not even the concern. And I would even argue the Colts are better on offense than they were just 2 weeks ago.
Much. I think they're much better because you're seeing Jonathan Taylor really kind of fit in to what they want him to do.
And the biggest reason I think the Colts win this week is because I think last week was the litmus test. And I think Devontae Adams had a great game, and I think Aaron Rodgers had a great game, and the Colts won despite both of those things being true. and just put yourself in every other franchise's position. And can you look yourself in the mirror and say, this football team can beat Aaron Rodgers on a day when Aaron Rodgers does Aaron Rodgers things. And oh, by the way, Davante Adams did his thing too. And the Colts won anyway. That's how I have this feeling that the more I'm talking myself out of saying it's a reasonable ball game, and I'm saying like, oh no, this is like a 31-0 game. But
yeah, it's definitely a 31-0 game.
Derrick Henry is the only reason I'm saying the Colts don't shut them out completely. But yeah, here we are, the end of episode. I'm pretty sure it's like 13 or 14.
13-ish.
13-ish. could be more prepared. Could be less prepared. That's what I say. But yeah. Now that we've kind of wrapped her up.
Hey, everybody, man, remember to follow us on the Twitter machine.
Please do.
Again, follow Jared, Likely Alien. Follow the podcast at Pod Pancake. Follow myself at Nice Read Steve. Rate and review us 5 stars wherever you get your podcast from. Also, please be safe during Thanksgiving and over the holidays. I know it's going to be hard for a lot of people to they're not going to be able to see family as much, but please take every precaution from someone who his life has been affected by COVID. It's not worth it to see everybody for one day. Given what you could lose. So please be safe, wear a mask, try to quarantine if you can. If you do have to go to Thanksgiving dinner, have one person do all the serving, make them wear a mask and gloves so then you're not passing utensils and breathing on all the food. Just try to be safe, and we want everybody to have a safe and happy holidays and know that we do care about everybody that listens to the show.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great way to end it. And like I said, wear masks, stay safe, and we'll talk to you after this week's game. Go Colts, baby.